we have to, before we start talking about Joseph, we have to realize that Jacob, the father of these sons or these tribes, we pretty much talked about his life and the ups and downs of his life and how that he made mistakes as a youth, being very deceptive to get where he was going. And we know what he did to his brother Esau and deceived him out of his birthright, and or out of the blessing, I should say. And now that last week's lesson, where Jacob has come back to, after 20 years of being off and to his uncle Laban's, what I would call labor camp, because he had to work for 14 years to have the woman that he wanted. And out of that 20-year episode with his uncle Laban, comes back to the land of Canaan, and he is made up with his brother Esau, and he's living in freedom in the land of Canaan here with his sons, whom he brought out of Mesopotamia. He had these sons while he was outside of the land of Canaan, and now he's bringing these in. It's important to know, too, that, you know, even when he was working for his uncle Laban, thinking the whole time from the beginning that he was working 7 years for the woman that he truly loved, which was Rachel, the Bible tells us she was beautiful, and he was in love with her, and he was working 7 years for her, only to be tricked by his uncle saying, no, you're getting my oldest, Leah, who he was not in love with. And sometimes when we read stories like this, we think that we are to dislike Leah as well, but we're not. Leah was not part of this. Leah is not someone that we should think negatively of. She was just doing what she was told, and we believe that God blessed Leah, because when we break down the sons, the 12 sons of Jacob, Leah is going to give him 6 of the sons, of the 12 sons. Half the sons are going to be born by Leah. She's going to give him Reuben and Simeon and Levi, Judah, which is where Christ will come from. The tribe of Judah is going to come out of the loins of Leah, Issachar and Zebulun. But then Leah is also going to have a concubine that she's going to give to Jacob, named Bilhah. And Bilhah is going to give birth to the tribe of Dan and Naphtali. And then finally, Rachel, who was barren, is going to have, she gives her handmaiden or her for a concubine by the name of Zilpah. And she is going to give birth to Gad and Asher. But then the last two tribes of Israel, the two young guys here, Rachel's womb is going to be opened. And Rachel, who Jacob loved and from the beginning, is going to give birth to Joseph and Benjamin. Joseph will become, and it was quite possibly because it was Rachel's first child. You know, Jacob's already got 10 sons. He's got a daughter named Dinah, and he should be thrilled. Reuben is his oldest, and just like Esau was, could have had a birthright to him. Reuben is the proper owner of the birthright and the double portion blessing that when Jacob is going to die, he's supposed to give a double portion to his oldest. But we find out early on in here that he loves Joseph. He is doing the same thing that his father Isaac did between him and Esau. He is going to show favoritism to one of his 12 sons, and he has chosen the first son from Rachel, whom he loved the most. And we assume that that's possibly the reason why he loved Joseph so much, is because he had loved Rachel for so long and now her womb is open. So Joseph comes out as his favorite, and Joseph has some personality to him. Some of it as a youth is not liked by his brothers, as you can imagine. He would be what we call today a tattletale. He would typically would run to his father and tell on his older brothers what they're doing, what kind of mischief they're up in doing. And Jacob could always count on Joseph to tell on his brothers. And so he was kind of his eyes and ears out there. And of course, this does not bode well for Joseph in the form of brotherly love. Because one thing we learn from the early part of Genesis is that so many of these stories is about sibling rivalry. Brother hating brother and plotting to kill, all the way back from Abel and then Cain. And then, of course, Jacob and Esau wanting to kill Jacob. And now we have some rivalry going on here as well. But Jacob is not you know, he's not separated from fault here because he's the one showing favoritism. So when we get to this point of the story today, not only do we know that Joseph is a young man who tells on his brothers a lot of times, but he's also the favored son, and it tells us that in chapter 37 of Genesis, verse 3, when it says, "Now Israel," which is Jacob, after his name has been changed to Israel, "now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children." That lets us know flat out that there's favoritism involved in this, because he was the son of his old age. Well, it's possible, but Benjamin's even younger than Joseph. There was makes more sense to say that he loved Joseph because of his Rachel's firstborn. And the father made him, Joseph, a coat of many colors. Now, if we study this further, now you would think a coat of many colors, obviously this is something that means something to Jacob. The colors could have meant some type of royalty, or say it had some type of a standing. The coat of many colors had some symbolism to it that the brothers, when they saw it, this wasn't just a coat to keep the draft away. This wasn't just a coat to make him feel more comfortable during the windy days of out in the land of Canaan or whatever. This has symbolism involved in it, and most likely how he thought of his son, of being his favored. But also, when you study this coat, it's also one that had long sleeves and was typically one that went down almost to the ground, meaning that this was certainly not a coat given to a person working. This was not a man used to hard labor. This was not a son who was used to being out in the field, doing the farming and the working like his brothers were. This gives us a little bit of an example of Joseph in his early youth. He was about 17 years old at this point, and how his brothers are feeling about him. Not only is Joseph the favored son of Jacob, which makes them angry in its own right, but he's also a tattletale. And now he's even given this robe that has symbolism that this child of mine is the favored son, and the size and the shape of the robe indicates that he is a non-labor person. He is someone that sticks close to his son and not one that's out there in the field with his brothers, which adds to the disdain that his brothers have for him, as the guy won't even work with us out here. He's always around dad. So they dislike him for multiple reasons. So in verse 4 it says, "And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all of them, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." That's a big hate there. They hated him so much that they couldn't speak to him, didn't want to talk to him in a peaceable manner, didn't like to talk when they gathered around. Anything good came out of their mouths about Joseph. They all just talked about how much they hated him, which is a bad start. And in verse 5, which you don't have, the episode starts where the brothers are taking their sheep, their flock, out to the land of Shechem, which is where Jacob would settle when God told him, no, you're not going to settle here. Remember last week we said God came to visit him after he had made peace with Esau and he settled in Shechem. And God said, no, I want you to go back to Bethel. Return to Bethel. That's where I met you when you were fleeing from your brother 20 years earlier. Go back to Bethel. But here the brothers are going back to Shechem where, you know, they were first settled, and they're spreading their flocks out there to eat the grasses of Shechem. And Jacob is worried about them because we don't know why. We don't know if it's a time that they've spent away, but he's worried about them. So he tells Joseph that, I want you to go do something for me. I want you to go and actually scout them out. Go and find them. I want you to find them, what they, you know, tell me how they are, what's going on there. And it says as he had been talking to these brothers, he had had a dream. This is the downfall. I shouldn't say downfall. This is a problem with Joseph. Not only is he a kind of a tattletale in his youth, but he's a dreamer. He has dreams, and having a dream is not the problem. Having a dream is not that could be something that God uses to speak to us, as he did with Joseph. You can have dreams, and in those dreams, it could be God telling you what he has planned for your life. You may not even fully understand the dreams, as Joseph is truly not going to fully understand. But his first dream that he has is that they're all out in the fields, and they're gathering wheat together in these sheaves that kind of stand up and things like that. And they're all gathering it on the ground, tying it together. And his sheath rises up on its own and stands straight up. And the other brothers, the other 11 brothers, are also tying their sheaves together. And these sheaves stand up and then bow down to Joseph's sheave that is still there. Now, that's one thing to have a dream from, whether it's from God or not, to have a dream about something unusual like that. But it's a whole other thing to tell people about it. And here Joseph, what he's doing is he's, because his brothers are involved in the dream, he thinks they would find it fascinating. So he's going to go and tell his brothers, listen to this dream that I've had. My sheath comes straight up out of the ground. All of yours comes up and bows down to mine. Isn't that interesting? You know, your sheaves bow down to my sheaves. What could this mean? Well, this doesn't enliven the brothers any more to him than they already had. And they start mocking him. Oh, are we really going to bow down to you? Is this what you're trying to tell us? That as time passes, we're going to bow down? Where you're going to reign over us? So their anger and hatred is growing to a point where they're just saying, this kid's got no bounds. So in verse 9, it says he dreamed yet another dream. And he told it to his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars, isn't that interesting number? The 11 stars in my dream made obeisance to me or bowed down to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him. Now, this father has already got his favoritism on Joseph, but even in favoritism, he's knowing that this isn't smart. You don't tell dreams like this. If you're having them is one thing, but don't tell them to people that will only make them hate you even more. He rebukes him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? He's making a mockery from his, to his own son that, you know, you're telling us a dream that none of us are going to endure. We're not going to like it. Not knowing that this is exactly what they're going to do, as the next couple lessons that we get into, God is showing Joseph that this is what I have in store for you. He doesn't tell him how he's going to get there, but he's given him these dreams and these thoughts that I am going to elevate you to a level where even your father and your brethren are going to bow to you. Does it mean that he's going to be reigning over them? Or what? Joseph doesn't know, but he's getting these same dreams over and over, and it's just boiling over into him, so he's wanting to tell his brothers and his father, and of course, they can't see how this could be possible. They don't know that in the future there's going to be a famine. They don't know in the future that they're going to have to go to Egypt just to beg for food, and they're going to run into Joseph, and Joseph's going to take care of them. If they knew that, they wouldn't care. They would say, well, bless God. Thank you for giving our son, giving Joseph this dream, letting him know that there's going to come a time when we're going to need him, and he's going to be in the right place by you, so everything, you're taking care of us, so we're thrilled. He can have all the dreams he wants, God, because I know what the end result's going to be. But we don't know that, and they don't know that. All they're hearing their brother talk about is, you're going to bow down to me. And nobody likes to hear that. So they're just boiling over with anger, even to the point where his father rebukes him for the same thing. And verse 11 said something that added to the hatred. It said, and his brethren envied him. His brethren envied him. Now, we just came out of hate. Now, if you couple hatred with envy, you got a real problem. Because envy is holding a grudge against someone that is enjoying something that you don't have. If you are envious of someone else, it holds a grudge that I envy this person because of either what they have that I don't, or where they're going that I'm not, something that they're doing or have is something I'll never have, and I envy them of that. And envy coupled with hatred just brings destruction, and that's what's about to happen to these brothers. Up to now, they've just talked about their hatred for him. Up to now, they've just despised him because he's a young, arrogant kid. But now, when they add envy to it, something is about to happen. So now we get into the story where they send, they're out in the Shechem, letting their fields or their flocks graze, and Jacob is going to send Joseph out there to check on these brothers to see how they're going. And verse 18 says, "And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him." Hatred and envy have gotten to the point where they now say, "What do we have to? We've got him where we want him. He's away from his father's tent. We can do with him out here." This is about 2 or 3 days' journey away from their father's tent, so no one will know. It's us brothers against him. Let's kill this kid, and we'll tell a story on him, or we'll make an excuse for it. And interestingly enough, in verse 21, it says, "And Reuben, the oldest, heard it." Reuben has a little bit of a history with his father. What you may forget is Reuben, who's the oldest, who's quite a bit older than Joseph is. Reuben is going to get the double blessing. He's the firstborn. He's going to get the predominant land grant. He's going to get all the blessings, supposedly, traditionally, from his father, Jacob. But Reuben made a mistake of his own. Reuben, one day, went into the tent of Jacob's concubine, Bilhah, and he slept with Bilhah. Now, Bilhah was the mother of his two brothers, Dan and Naphtali. But being the oldest, Reuben did this in basically what the biblical terms would say was basically rob his father's couch, or he would did something obviously immoral with his father's concubine. And because of this, he's going to have to pay a price for this. So Reuben has a checkered past with his father. And so Reuben, who is the oldest, he's going to get all the double portion, realizes that his own father probably has a grudge against him. So he, either out of responsibility or a desire to win back his father, or just because he's the oldest and probably the wisest at the time, he heard it and he delivered him out of their hands. He says, "No, we're not going to kill him." He said unto them in verse 22, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again." What the Bible is telling us is that Reuben is conducting a plot of his own. Don't kill him. Don't put the blood on your hands of your own brother. Put him in this pit. There's no water around here. He can't get out of it. He'll die there. And we didn't slay him ourselves. Knowing, as the Bible tells us, or the Bible insinuates, that Reuben has a plan to go and get him out of there later and preserve him. And for whatever reason, we're not told, Reuben leaves the camp for a while. And as they leave the camp, they do put him in the pit, but they also, something happens. We'll read verses 23 and 26. As it said, "And it came to pass, when Joseph was coming to his brethren, and they stripped Joseph out of his coat, his coat of many colors that was on him." He wore that coat that they hated. We wore that thing out there to see, check on his brothers. And, he probably, Joseph wasn't making very good decisions. "And they took him and cast him into the pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread." They don't care a bit, do they? They know what they've done. They're going to put him in this pit and let him die there. And you can imagine he's screaming to the high heavens, "Get me out of here. There's no water. I can't get out." He's yelling to his brothers, "Don't leave me here to die." And they're eating. They have no concern at all. Now, that's why I was telling you, sometimes when we revere the 12 tribes of Israel, these brothers had problems. They had some real problems themselves, and here they are letting one of their brothers die willfully, and they're eating a meal. It doesn't bother them at all. "And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt." And so Judah, where Christ will come from, the tribe of Judah, Judah said unto his brethren, What profit is it if we slay our brother here in the pit and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. So Judah is thinking, hey, I know how to do it. You know, Reuben's gone. They're still wanting to kill him, apparently, while he's in the pit. Probably tired of hearing him scream out. And so Judah stands up and says, I got a better idea. This is it. These Ishmaelites passing through with their caravan. Let's just sell him. We'll make a profit off of this kid. We'll sell him. They'll take him to Egypt, and he'll be a slave for his whole life. So Judah's making a business decision over this whole thing and saying to his brothers, and the blood won't be on us. We'll just tell the old man that he was robbed. He was stolen from we never saw him. Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh, and his brothers were content. Sounds like a great idea. So they're selling him to the Ishmaelites, which, and we know that from history, are also the children of Abraham through Ishmael. So they're cousins here, but they're passing through this caravan of camels going to Egypt, and they're going to sell him to them. So in verse 28, then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, businessmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. And with this, now the brother is gone. Now the menace to the brothers, the tattletale, the guy who thought he was going to rule over them, they've gotten rid of him. So now what are they going to tell their father? So these brothers, these famous 12 tribes of Israel, get together and they concoct a story that they're going to slay a goat, take the blood of the goat, they're going to throw it all over his coat and rip the coat up a little bit, and they're going to take it back to Jacob and say, well, this is what we found. What do you think it means? And knowing fully well that the father is going to believe that he was killed by a wild beast. And the brothers were nowhere around. They just found the coat. So this was the story that they're going to do to be rid of Joseph. So as interesting of a story as this is, we are led to believe that Joseph will never be heard of again, that he is going to be off to Egypt as a slave to live his life, which will be a short one as a slave. You would basically live to be in your 20s and die of just exhaustion and malnourishment and things of this nature. So his life is not long for this earth, if you're following traditional ideology of what the brothers certainly are thinking of. So all they're caring about now is, how do we go back to our brother, our father, and explain this and go on about our lives? God knows here what we don't know is that a famine is coming, and God's not choosing to end the famine or to get the famine, not to have a famine. That's the fascinating part of God that so many times we marvel at, is that when he sees something that could devastate his plan of action as far as multiplying the seed of Abraham and the children of Israel and all of this, he takes plans to not only not stop the famine, but he gets involved in the famine. He finds a way to provide for his people to the point where his people know that he is in support of them, that he's going to take care of them no matter what they face. And this is what we learn as we study the book of Genesis in particular, is that God knows the event that's coming, and the people that are living in the time do not. Therefore, they're reacting to their immediate circumstances. Let's get rid of this brother and all of these things. But God allows it because he's got a purpose for Joseph all the way. And he knows he's got to get Joseph. It's as if God is, he either knows he's got to get Joseph into Egypt somehow, and Joseph won't go his own way because he's too tied into his father, or the decisions of the brother, God uses that and says, all right, I'll make it happen this way. We don't know. God is working through all of it, no matter what decisions is made. And we know now that God has his man that he is wanting to use in the future. He's got him on the way to Egypt. That's all we know. So the brothers go back, and they took Joseph's coat. They killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or not. Or tell us, isn't this the coat you gave Joseph? And he knew it, and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast have devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent into pieces. He's destroyed my son. And it goes on to say that he wept to where he was uncontrollable. They could not control Jacob's weeping over his son. And the Midianites got into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard, and they sold Joseph, 17 years old. They sold him to this man named Potiphar, a ruling agent of Pharaoh in Egypt. Providence of God taking care of Joseph, using this event to benefit his people, even though the people were the ones who wanted the very opposite thing that God wanted. The brothers wanted to destroy Joseph. God wanted Joseph in Egypt, and it happened in this manner. As we continue the story next week and we get into the actual story of Potiphar, and in particular Joseph, as he's developing. Joseph's on his own. He's outside of his father's camp. He's away from the protection of his father. He's on his own. He starts growing closer and closer to God because he has no one there to protect him. We don't know full well at this young age of his how close he was to God at this point. But he is trusting God now because he's desperate. His life is in God's hands. And through that, God's going to use him, as we're going to see next week. The brothers that go back, we don't learn really their fates until near the end of Jacob's death, which we're going to talk in two or three weeks down the road, and some of the blessings that he gives out to his 12 sons. We realize that Reuben, and we'll talk about this then, but I found it fascinating, that Reuben, who tried to save the life of Joseph, whether to gain back more of his blessings from his father or whatever, Reuben should have been the one who says, no, we're going to not do this. He's the oldest. He's responsible for the rest of these brothers. Being the oldest, he's holding the responsibility of their actions. And so when he realizes that they've gone against him and they've sold him into slavery, and now Reuben is knowing, well, my plan's gone. I was going to take him back, steal him away and take him back to his daddy's house. Now Reuben, who didn't take the initiative to make it happen or to stop it and say, you're not going to do anything to this son, we know that Reuben in the end will have the double portion that was planned for him taken from him. When Jacob gives the blessing to Reuben, he takes the double portion away from him and gives it to Joseph. Was it his favorite son all the way to then, or was it because of what happened in this episode that Jacob will learn about when he goes and sees his son again before his death? We don't know. But Reuben's double portion of the land that was going to be broken up to him, Reuben winds up with a very, very small portion on the other side of Jordan, where Joseph and his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, will get the double portion, so that when all of Israel is together, the United Kingdom of Israel, the majority of the land, probably 45%, if you look at the breakup of it, is given to the two sons of Joseph, who takes the double portion of the land from his father away from Reuben. Reuben had a chance to do things right and walked away from it, and he paid the price for it. God's plan is going to go forward, and we see that this just built up the animosity between the brothers. Next week, we're going to talk about how the dreams that he gave his brothers that they hated so much are going to make sense to them, and they're going to see the providence of God and the direction of God, and how that the whole time God was trying to give Joseph notice that I'm going to use you in an incredible way that no one at that time knew. As God talks to us, as God gives us visions, dreams, whatever it may be, we are to go with God, even when we don't understand it. But you may learn that sometimes you don't have to always tell people what God's been planning to do for you, because the people don't always know that that's going to be for their benefit either. So always yearn for God's message and vision and dreams and talking to you. Seek God's counsel. And when he does talk to you, hold it into your heart and say, "What do with me as you wish." And know that God, if you put your trust in him, God's going to make it, going to turn it out into his fruition to the betterment of his glory. And we're going to see that out happen next week in Joseph's life. I'm going to shut it off a little early today with that. That's as far as I can go without getting into next week. So we'll see you then.